We're back. Getting back to, Ted, what you were just saying about preaching from the pulpit. Go right ahead.
Yes, you see, the scriptures say that the Lord tells us to hate evil. Now, there's a common idea, a prevalent idea in the church and in the nation and society that God dearly loves all homosexuals, and it's out of the question that he could hate homosexuals. Of course, he hates their sin, but there's no chance that he would ever hate a homosexual. But the Bible states very clearly that the Lord hates the deceitful and violent man. It says that he loved Jacob, but he hated Esau. Now, the fact is that a pastor has to have the right to use strong language against homosexuality. He has to have the right to say that the Old Testament describes it as an abomination. He has to have the right even to bring up the stories in the time of the kings of how the righteous kings actually slaughtered the Sodomites as an act of God, and how it states very clearly in Scripture that that was ordained and sanctioned and blessed by God. Now, all of that is considered hate speech, but if he sounds forth like that from the pulpit, you see, he could be guilty of aiding and abetting or inducing some unstable soul to go out and actually threaten physical violence against a homosexual. Now, he is not going to do that specifically, but what Title 18, Section 2 says is that that pastor has a role of aiding or abetting some person indirectly, that pastor can also be indicted and face a federal hate crime charge. Now, this is the very foundation of the federal hate bill we're talking about today, in which pastors could immediately be indicted if it could be traced back to them through testimony of a defendant that he heard the pastor on the radio or even in the pulpit using such strong incendiary language against homosexuality as the Bible does. So this is very dangerous. This is legislation which could be immediately indictable against Christian leaders, even talk show hosts, publishers and writers like myself who might be making strong statements that could be described as aiding or abetting.
And let's carry it a step further. I know that in the bill, the original bill, it does have a host of groups, identifiable groups that are identified as protected organizations. But under the USA Patriot Act, for instance, you see, I could be charged, you could be charged of being aiding and abetting terrorism against the United States because of what we say that's critical of the Bush administration, for instance. Some of the things that Bush is doing, some of the things that the United States government is doing in Iraq right now and planning to do in Iran. It isn't far-fetched to suggest that another extension of this law could, in fact, be put on the books in Congress. It's bad enough that the president signs Directive 51 and other executive orders, but here we could extend it again and add other protections for other groups, as they're called, when in fact they're not protections, they are exercises of raw power on the part of the federal government.
That's right. Well, what is the most effective form of warfare? Well, sometimes those who are engaged in warfare find that dropping leaflets on the enemy in which you are causing demoralization among the enemy's troops is more effective than bombs and rockets, you see.
Mm-hmm.
And you and I are basically in a position of intellectual attack upon Zionism and the usurpations of Zionist power in the Middle East. Well,
mm-hmm.
Israel is supposed to be our ally in the war on terrorism.
Yes.
So you see,
it's
much of a stretch of imagination to see how we could be described as intellectual terrorists against our dependable democratic ally in the Middle East, Israel.
I wouldn't be surprised. Stay where you are, Ted. We'll be right back with more.
On RBNLive.com.
Okay, we're back with Ted Pike, and Ted, we do have other calls, so we'll go to the phones now if you'd like to.
Sure.
Let's do that, and I'll bring up some other parts of this column as he concludes so we can we can round it all out and make people understand the urgency of fighting this legislation. But right now, Ernie in Virginia is next. Hello, Ernie.
Hello, Rick, and hello, Reverend Pike.
Yes.
Enjoying the discussion in terms of your command of the facts and the research that you've done. I greatly appreciate your work, Reverend Pike, and also Rick for going through this article step by step. And what was very troubling was in the earlier discussion was the lack of evidence, the lack of significance to support this, and you got a question, what are the cost benefits of this legislation if only 1/20 of 1% of the crimes in the country are in this category? So where is this rush to do this legislation if there isn't another agenda afoot here, consistent with Agenda 21, our attack on private property rights? And if you recall last year when the Republicans had control in the Senate, Senator Specter sat on the restoration of private property rights, Senate Bill 1313. So we have not only an attack on our First Amendment rights, step at a time, this chilling effect on free speech, the attack on our private property rights, and look at the timing of the immigration issues and open borders, the North American Union, North American Union, one world government, and the potential attack on Iran. Here's my question to Reverend Pike. This FirstAmendmentCenter.com, and where this article is found, is this a nonprofit or is this a commercial entity, this First Amendment Center, and does it receive federal grants?
I really don't know. I just got this article from Rick, invitation last night, and I do know I've heard Charlie Haynes many times, I believe on McNeil Lehrer, programs like that. He's a kind of a left-leaning a political savant and so on. He describes himself here as a top scholar on this subject. I really don't know too much about it.
You're right. Well, to see such language and to hear proponents say violent attacks are affecting an entire community, the community, the emphasis on communitarianism by the one world government crowd and the globalist crowd suggests to me possibly this gentleman is connected either with the Council on Foreign Relations or somebody is funding this guy, and there is a potential conflict of interest here to spin this, because the facts alone here are not convincing to me that we need this legislation.
No.
But I got to wonder, why is the House continuously voting on this year in and year out when the cost benefits are not clear to anyone?
Yeah, well, the fact of the matter is that one of the strongest arguments to be wary of this bill is that the ADL keeps wanting it so desperately. This is probably the fifth time since 1998 that they've tried to get it passed in Congress. Now, ostensibly, the ADL says, oh, we are so concerned about the bleeding homosexuals out there who are being battered by right-wingers and redneck Christians, evangelicals, and so on, that we've got to have special federal protection for this poor, beleaguered minority in San Francisco and New Orleans and so on. Well, I don't think the ADL really loves the homosexuals that much. What they want here is legislation which gives them a massive power from the federal level to make indictments, to enforce their twisted definition of hate and hate crimes, and be basically in the driver's seat of persecution coming from the federal government. That's what they want. That's what this bill gives them in no uncertain terms, the right to silence pastors, to indict pastors and talk show hosts and those who speak out very boldly against all forms of evil.
Well, you know what you're saying here, Reverend Pike? This is consistent with the liberal Zionism concept of the state being supreme over our God-given rights of individual free speech, making the state supreme in all matters and having the people worship the state as opposed to God.
That's right. It's a federalization of government power, part of the trend which began with FDR in the 30s has continued to erode our states' rights and so on. To his credit, President Bush did intervene a month ago. He sent word to the members of the House of Representatives that he was being advised by his top advisors not to go along with this, but rather to veto the hate bill if it is passed in the House and the Senate. And his argument was exactly what you're saying, that this is unnecessary, that state laws are more than adequate to punish all kinds of crimes, of violence, and so on, regardless of whether they're bias motivated or not.
Well, I, you know, hearing that, it
doesn't allay your fears.
No, it does not.
And another thing, by the way, Bush is very angry now with many of the so-called colleagues of his and the Republicans in the Senate over the vote on cloture on this amnesty bill, which, of course, he denies is amnesty for illegals. But now because of that, there is some intervention to try to get them to, maybe they'll see things a little bit differently on the hate bill and throw the White House a bone. You know what I'm trying to say?
Oh, yes, I know what you're saying.
And that may very well happen with a few votes changing. And remember, there are some key votes that have to be looked at, and if you go to truthtellers.org, Ted Pike has the list of senators that people should be concentrating on now, and that's what we're trying to do here.
Well, you know, I made some calls this morning to Senator Kennedy's office and Senator Smith's office, and they were quite revealing their comments to me.
Uh-huh.
They said basically they believe they have the 60 votes necessary to pass the hate bill in the Senate. But as we know, there's been big legislation there, the immigration, mm-hmm. Iraq, and so on.
There you go.
They say they have been delayed, but they are very anxious to move it forward, and they are living under the cloud of this threatened veto from President Bush, and they're also living under a certain cloud of filibuster in the Senate coming from the Senate Minority Leader, O'Connell.
Mm-hmm.
They are confident that they have a very strong case, and what they told me today is even if the president does veto it, immediately they're going to bring that bill back into the House and the Senate and try to get a two-thirds majority to override the president's veto, mm-hmm. or to come up with a compromise bill and work with the president to fulfill his pledge at the beginning of his first administration to pass some kind of modified hate bill. They were very aware of that promise by Bush to pass some kind of modified hate bill.
Well,
kind of a light at the end of their tunnel.
That's bad news either way.
Yeah.
It's certainly bad news.
And you don't want that. You want to do to this bill what we've done with the amnesty bill thus far, and that is to kill it, to kill the cloture so that it can be debated and filibustered but not voted in the affirmative.
Oh, absolutely, Rick and Reverend Pike, but you right now, from what I've been reading, the president is concerned about his legacy, and he's done so many reversals. For example, mm-hmm. he was opposed mm-hmm. initially to the Law of the Sea Treaty. Now he's making that a grandstand mm-hmm. play, and perhaps he will work a deal to get this Law of the Sea Treaty to give the UN jurisdiction over all the oceans and further undermine our national sovereignty. And so I see this is a stepping stone, a potential issue that he could use to get his Law of the Sea Treaty. And as you know, he pushed us back in the UNICEF, back to the UN agenda to get UNESCO.
Right.
To give the UN jurisdiction over our mm-hmm. national parklands, and he's still pushing this North American Union and this NAFTA superhighway system, and he thinks that's the way to go and more free trade to solve with the free trade of America.
In other words, don't believe him when he says he's going to veto the bill.
Oh, absolutely.
All right. I get the point.
And
really,
I will
thank you.
And Rick, one last thing.
Sure.
I have called many times,
sure.
and if you've called once, Don't fail to call again, because every week's a new week.
Absolutely, now more than ever, because now, as Ted says, they're trying to concentrate on bringing this bill forward now. And the Democrats don't like, just like the Republicans, don't like losing every battle.
So
we have to get them to get used to it.
And keep calling up against the amnesty bill.
Never give up, never give up, and continue, because it goes to show you what you can do when you become enraged. And now that we have so many other organizations, from the American Family Association, the Dobson's Group, Focus on the Family, all of these other groups that, you know, have disparate views on issues are united on this bill.
And
so
this
we need to oppose it.
This is a major piece of legislation that we need to stop.
Amen.
Thank you, Rick.
All right, thank you.
Thank you,
Ernie. We have other callers. We'll get to them. We have a break coming up. I want to finish this column also by Mr. Haynes, okay, so that we can round out our point-by-point refutation of the issues that he's bringing up from the other side and his implied, if you will, pretense of not fearing this kind of legislation. So there is a bias here, and there is a sort of a rather subtle but nonetheless evident bias to try to promote the bill. We'll be back, 800-313-9443, with Ted Pike. Go to his website, www.truthtellers.org, and you can download the petitions and download other materials to make the case against the hate bill. We'll be right back. Rick Adams, Radio Avenger, will return in 3 minutes with your calls.
Get back at him with Rick Adams, the Radio Avenger, on the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Okay, we're back now, and let's go right back to the phones. People have been waiting for a while. Patrick in Georgia is next with Ted Pike. Hello, Patrick.
Yes, good evening. Thank you for taking my call, Rick.
Yes, you're welcome.
Just wondering if you guys had heard the ADL's position with respect to your statistics.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I've got an article that was published on the ADL's website back on December the 14th of 2000, and it discusses their efforts to monitor hate and curtail hate on the Internet.
Mm-hmm.
And it was talking about the hate crimes and gave some statistics, and it noted that the although the states and the FBI made little to do about, you know, basically said there weren't that many hate crimes reported. And the ADL's position is, well, that's because the people who are responsible for investigating the hate crimes don't know what these hate crimes are. We've got to get in here and train these law enforcement officers to teach them what hate crimes are, so they will be able to go out and make these arrests and prosecutions or whatnot. And they gave out cards to every law enforcement agency in the United States. It just goes far, far beyond anything.
Okay. Ted, that I was, you're familiar with what they've been doing.
Yes, the ADL has been pivotal in creating definitions of hate crimes, which both on the federal level and on the state level, clear down to the local police precincts, are the standard for the nation. Now, the ADL's working definition, this is not maybe the official definition, but their working definition is that hate is bias. If you are biased against federally protected groups, such as Jews and homosexuals, you are by definition a hater. And if that hate or that biased motivation results in some kind of a crime, small or great, that crime united with your bias creates a hate crime. Now, what they do is they're very concerned that the right to define a hate crime be left up to the investigating officers. In fact, in testimony I have before Congress in a committee in Congress in 1987, the ADL, who was testifying there in describing and promoting the federal hate bill, proto version of that in the Hate Crime Statistic Act, they said they want to insist that it's up to the discretion of investigating officers on the street to have the final word on whether a hate crime has been committed or not. Now, you see, what they're not wanting to do is for that alleged hate crime to go through the courts, to be adjudicated by a judge or a jury and so on. They want the investigating officers to have the last word, because the investigating officers are subject to the emotions and the anguish of homosexuals and so on who claim that they are the victim of words of intimidation and hurtful speech, even threatening speech and so on. Now, if you can have a very loose definition of what a hate crime incident or a hate crime is, then that means you can swell the number of so-called hate crimes incidents nationally over a period of a year. And that's exactly what happens. You know, I talked to the hate crimes unit here in Portland, Oregon, and the lady there who gathered statistics for the FBI.
Yes.
And I asked her very specifically. I said, what if the police went out to an apartment house and several homosexuals were very tearfully describing how that a Christian down the hall mm-hmm. said that he was going to bash them and maybe mm-hmm. even kill them because of their homosexuality, uh-huh. quoting scripture and so on. And these homosexuals were victims of a threat of violence from this obviously biased Christians. I said, would you tally that up? If police believe that they really were a victim of that verbal abuse, that verbal violence, would you tally that up as a hate crime here in Portland, Oregon, and send that off to the FBI? She said, absolutely, because it's up to the local police investigating officers to have the final word, not what the verdict is coming out of a court. So what that means is that the vast majority of these so-called hate crimes in the United States, which average about 7,500 annually, are nothing more than the opinions of investigating officers saying that intimidation, hurt feelings, and so on has occurred out on the street level during their beat. It doesn't mean that there have been 7,500 court cases. In fact, it's very rare that any alleged hate crime ever goes through the court system. So it's a very loose and circumstantial definition of a hate crime, which serves the ADL's purposes of magnifying an illusory epidemic of hate in America.
Well, what would you say to someone if they are coming up and saying, well, the hate crimes are not being reported accurately?
No, that's the truth is that they are overreported. The fact is that actual substantive hate crimes in which, let me describe a real hate crime. If you hated a homosexual and you actually assaulted him, that would be a hate crime. That's very rare.
Okay. Hey, we got a break, though. Thank you very much for raising the questions, Patrick. We'll be back in 3 minutes with our other callers, 1-800-313-9443. The federal hate crime law threatens our freedom. We'll be right back with more. I'm Rick Adams. Okay, we're back now with Ted Pike, and one more thing from the Haynes column where he talks about the case of Philadelphia. He doesn't mention the ADL involvement at all, of course, but he does mention the fact that in discussing what happened, he said a state court eventually dismissed all charges, ruling that protesters were exercising First Amendment rights and had not violated the hate crimes law. Again, eventually is the key word here. And the fact that there were several charges brought, and they had to go through the court, they had to wait for this to be adjudicated, and of course this is expensive, as you know, Ted, and many of the people who are charged are not afforded an opportunity to have paid attorneys. They have to go out and find representation. They have to pay for representation. And, you know, this is going on in state after state. We have the Human Rights Commission here where I'm from, and they, of course, investigate complaints. People can file a civil complaint, not just a criminal complaint, as you know. but a civil complaint that someone has been harassing them. We just had a case that's going through the court now where a landlord is charged with harassment, verbal harassment of homosexual tenants.
Yeah.
And whether that's going to be a hate crimes prosecution by the Attorney General, I don't know at this point. But if, in fact, it is verbal abuse and harassment, that's one thing. But to now charge them with some sort of a hate-motivated crime or criminal activity is another thing altogether. Again, it's creating a special case law, and it's creating a special class of criminals who are not criminals,
you know,
simply because of their thoughts.
That's very significant. You know, about 5 years ago when I was researching my hate crimes video, which is now being shown at google.com,
mm-hmm.
I had a very lengthy conversation with one of the detectives of the hate crimes unit of the Vancouver, British Columbia hate crimes unit. And we were talking about how I was basically undercover, giving the impression that I was supportive, without duplicity, but being inclined in that direction. And this officer, this woman, was opening up to me very, very candidly, mm-hmm. about how they entrap conservatives, Christians, and so on,
uh-huh.
homophobic Christians under the hate crimes laws of British Columbia. And I said, well, what if you can't actually prove that a right-winger has actually held up, for example, homosexuals or Jews to actual intimidation or hatred? What if what they've done is just a little bit short of that criteria of a hate crime under the federal hate bill in Canada? And she said, oh, it's simple. We just charge them with harassment.
Mm-hmm.
She says, because harassment is so vague,
mm-hmm.
nobody quite knows what it is.
That's
and
exactly
is it physical, is it mental, or whatever? We just use harassment, and she says we can scoop them up through a harassment charge. Now, I mentioned at the beginning of this program how that this young girl in the state of Illinois has been brought in, indicted under the ADL's Illinois hate bill. Do you realize that a year ago the ADL was crowing on its website about how they had intervened and put pressure on the state house, the legislature in Illinois, to include harassment as a criteria of a hate crime
mm-hmm.
in Illinois? Exactly like the Vancouver police, ADL was broadening the net. And now here we see exactly that happened in the last several weeks as this misdirected teenager has now been in jail for 2 months, brought in before the court in shackles for simply harassing a couple of ex-boyfriends.
Yes. And, whether or not you're using, let's say you're using language to derogatorily depict the homosexuals, and you're using some of the vernacular words that are used, now that constitutes harassment and hate in the eyes of certain organizations and certain attorneys general as well, who
yes.
are overzealous not only in their prosecution but in their attempts to please the ADL. You know, I've said this many times, almost every attorney general I know of has been invited to go to Israel, of all places,
yes.
to go to the state of Israel, and the trip is paid for by the Israeli groups where these
yes.
attorneys general have to learn about terrorism, for instance.
Uh-huh.
Now, that's like, you know, I mean, that's like going to, I guess, to Soviet Russia to learn really about the evils of violence and learning the evils of communism and fascism. I mean,
sure.
that just doesn't add up. And yet these attorneys general step in line. They gladly appease the ADL and the AIPAC groups and just go right along to learn and then bring back their prosecutorial skills, you see?
Yes, that's right. Well, they're there with the chiefs of police, too. And a number of years ago, as I mentioned in this video, the hate laws video we did, the ADL actually invited the Organization of Chiefs of Police in America to have a historic first annual conference in Israel.
Right.
And the Mossad, again, taught them the latest terrorist tactics for dealing with insurrection and violence
yeah.
and so on.
Maybe torture would be one of those things.
Yeah.
And to conclude the column by Mr. Haynes, and it's entitled, again, Would Federal Hate Crime Law Threaten Religious Freedom? by the editors of the local newspaper here. He concludes by saying, is this an isolated case, the Philadelphia case, or a harbinger of worse to come? It's certainly possible that another overzealous prosecutor could try using the hate crimes law to stifle religious speech. But widespread misuse is highly unlikely. Well, isn't that nice?
Yeah.
Given the record of prosecutions under existing hate crimes laws over several decades. Now, we've already answered that objection quite clearly with the history of the laws in Canada and in Europe and how they've been applied.
Yeah.
So here in the United States, as you pointed out, never before has there been this extension of the federal law and this redefining of the law so that up until now there have been no extensions and no funding for the local states to go ahead and prosecute, providing for federal intervention when the federal government feels the states or the localities are not moving fast enough.
That's right.
That's in the bill, too.
Actually, the ADL has been quite confident that it can eventually get a big federal hate bill that can really do it upright as far as bringing indictments nationally, simultaneously on Christians and so on. That's why they're so frustrated that they may be even losing this time around, because they think, you know, we always have the majority of votes there. Why can't we finally squeak it through? But the fact of the matter is that these state hate laws, there's some 45 of them that have been enacted since about 1990, they're kind of sleeper laws. They are there in place with the potential, with the teeth, to do the job of persecuting Christians in America if it comes to that. But the ADL dreams of the ultimate prize, which is a federal umbrella law that will come down nationally with federal authority behind it. So we have not, contrary to what Mr. Haynes said, we have not had a viable experiment of hate law administration and enforcement here in America like they've had in Canada. And we have no reason to believe that we've given it a test and found out that it's harmless.
All right. And the number to call for your senators across America, 877-851-6437, toll free. The toll number, if you can't get through, is 202, area code, 224-3121. Let's take Doug in Texas now. Hello, Doug. Hi, Doug.
Yeah, I do think it is necessary to have hate crime law to stop all the goyim. We're giving the Jewish people, that the humble little Jewish people that control all the media and Congress and this and that and other, and the goyim are starting to wake up and figure out what's going on, and that could lead to an outbreak of anti-Semitism, because we know they're all Semitic. The Bronfmans and the Foxmans and the
So you think really, I know you're being facetious, but you think that this bill is indeed part of a strategy to prosecute all of us, basically, and none of them, essentially. It's going to be selective, right?
Oh, no. They never do anything like that. There's...
I get you.
Okay.
I get you, Doug.
Rick, how come you can always catch me when my tongue is firmly
planted
in my cheek?
Yes, I understand. Well, I think you make the point through humor quite well. Thank you, Doug. I appreciate
Sorry
that.
I disturbed you tonight.
No, that's fine.
I'll do it again tomorrow night.
All right. Okay.
Okay.
Well, anyway,
nice,
I appreciate that. Now, let's move along. We have Joe next. Hello, Joe. You're on the program with Ted Pike.
Hi, Rick.
Yes. Hi.
Hi, Ted.
Yes, Joe.
Ted, I'd like to go right to the scriptures, if I could. As far as hate is concerned, in Malachi, chapter 1, verse 3,
yes,
I quote the Father, Heavenly Father, and I hated Esau and laid his mountains and his heritage waste.
Mm-hmm.
mm-hmm. for the dragons of the wilderness. The Heavenly Father hated Esau. Mm-hmm. Not from this age, but what he did in the first world age, according to Romans chapter 9, verse 13, and associated verses. While he was a pink baby in the womb, he hated him. God hates. He does hate.
Mm-hmm.
And he has his reasons for it. Anybody that wants to challenge that, go right ahead. And good luck to you.
Yes.
I'd like to go over to Psalm 101.3. Psalm 101.3. Who forgiveth all these iniquities and healeth all these diseases? I'm sorry, Psalm 101.3. I will set no wicked thing before mine eyes. I hate the work of them that turn aside. Are those in the Hebrew, it's apostates. It shall not cleave to me. This is the Father speaking, I hate. Proverbs chapter 6:16. These six things doth the Lord hate. And he gives six things right after that. You see, the Lord does hate. Now, anybody that wants to charge him with a hate crime,
uh-huh.
good luck to you, friend.
I guess the ADL is trying anyway.
Now, evidently, the two witnesses in Revelation 11
uh-huh.
were very, very destructive to some folks in Jerusalem at the last days,
mm-hmm.
the very last days. And evidently, they were bringing forth a fire from their mouth. No doubt that fire was the scriptures. And they were probably quoting some scriptures like this. And it was making some people in Jerusalem very, very uncomfortable. You know, when the Kenites delivered up the two witnesses, when they do this, they actually think that the Kenites, these two witnesses, were not really the two witnesses mentioned in the scriptures. They think that they were frauds. So they're going to deliver those two up. Ultimately, this is what this is all leading to.
Mm-hmm.
The ability to lead these two up and 7,000 that are following them. And, of course, 144,000 are being woken up. That's, of course, the Lazarus priesthood. Lazarus' priesthood. Remember Jesus said to Lazarus, wake? That was symbolic of the end times, the priesthood of the end times being woken up.
Mm-hmm.
Certain of being woken up at this time.
Yes.
And these Kenites will say, these two are not the two witnesses, and they're going to deliver them up. And guess what? They were the two witnesses. Big, big mistake.
And where were they? In the streets of Jerusalem.
In the streets of Jerusalem,
right.
Yes.
And that will be the world headquarters of this anti-Christian system.
Right. And in the Greek, it's a pata, a large arena. Mm-hmm. And no doubt the cameras will be placed on these two when they're killed in the streets.
Mm-hmm.
No doubt. So that the world can see it. And that's why we have TV sets going into every house and all over the world. Now, so everybody has access to a TV set so they can view this particular event.
Sure.
But no doubt this is leading, all these bills and things are leading to this one
event. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think, Ted, you can attest to that one thing is leading to another, and eventually it's all about world control. I know people like Haynes wouldn't see that because they certainly can't afford to, but we can see it, and from the scriptures, it's pretty plain, isn't it?
you see, what apologists, those who are trying to defend the Bible and defend Christianity now,
yeah.
are trying to say is that, oh no, God couldn't possibly hate homosexuals. He hates their sin, but he dearly loves every last one of them. Well, the fact is that he has the right to throw them into hell.
Mm-hmm.
Now, sooner or later, he
right.
hates them. Is there a possibility that if he hates them eternally, he could also be brought, like he did with Esau because of his denial of his birthright,
mm-hmm.
to hate them while they're still walking around on two legs?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying who he hates and who he doesn't hate,
right.
But I'm saying we as Christians do not have the right to say that God cannot hate or
that's
cannot
right.
hate any sinner. And so what is being done here is these well-meaning clergy and organizations are trying to describe God as a God of absolutely slavish love toward homosexuals in order that we not justify the homosexual accusation that we are homophobic and hateful and all that kind of thing. But the fact is we have to stand by Scripture, and these verses that have been given to us tonight are a reminder that the Bible does say that God has a right
yes.
to hate all kinds of evil. Now, that hate is in the Scriptures. Are we going to deny it, or are we going to profess it? If we profess it, especially from the pulpit, if we speak it as boldly as it's being spoken tonight, we stand a very good chance of being indicted as hate criminals spouting hate speech, hate
yeah.
literature against a federally protected group. That's what's so very disturbing about this legislation, is that it goes directly, it is a sword hanging over the pulpits of this nation and of the world. If these laws are passed, the pastors are the ones who are going to be taken down to the police department, to the hate crimes unit, and have to give an answer for why they use hate speech against homosexuals.
Mm-hmm. Very true. Well, Joe, thank you.
Hey,
thanks
Rick,
for the call. Made the point very well. Excellent. All right, we'll be back to sum up the last segment of the program, Uncensored Radio Free America. How long will we remain free? Be right back with Ted Pike in just 3 minutes. Okay, and I've just been asked by callers to give out that toll-free number again, so I will, Ted. 877-851-6437. And the toll number that will get you through, you'll have to pay for the call, but it's worth it. If you can't get through the toll-free number, 202-224-3121. Please, this week, make it a point to get out the calls to all of the senators that you can and get the word out to your own senator. Most importantly, they vote no on this bill for the reasons that we've just given here tonight. And you can download information from www.truthtellers.org. Okay? How's that, Ted?
Yes. People should be aware that virtually the entire Jewish community in America is being mobilized to pass the hate bill
yes.
and to actually pressure President Bush to back down and not honor his commitment to veto the hate bill, which he made to the evangelicals. The Jewish Forward newspaper announced that except perhaps for some minority groups like the Orthodox, the Reform, Conservative, all left-wing Jews are very concerned that this Christian persecuting legislation go through. That's why it's important that we as Christians must be equally united, passionate in getting those phone calls in to our member of the Senate this week, because anytime they want to, as soon as they find an opening, they could move that hate bill out of judiciary and right onto the floor of the Senate for a vote.
Well, that's true, and I want to thank you for spending the time to give a point-by-point analysis of the Haynes column and where he completely missed the mark, whether intentionally or not. I think that was very important to do, because there are a lot of people who may even be listening to us who read these columns and think that maybe Ted Pike is exaggerating, maybe he's making this up, maybe he's just overanalyzing the bill. And that's why it was important to have you on tonight again, Ted. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much, Rick.
Okay, and we'll do it again, I'm sure. Let's keep up the heat. All right. Good night, Ted Pike.
Good night, Rick.
All right. Well, that's it, ladies and gentlemen. You see, it is getting right down to the wire, and time is short. It's important that you get on the phones, as you've done, by the way, with the amnesty bill for illegals. I mean, it was your call that the senators heard. I mean, all of them, Kyle and all of the rest of them, reacting with fear that, hey, my constituents are waking up. They're getting nervous. I better get nervous. I better change my tune. I better listen, because we can't pass this bill in this form. We cannot get closure. We simply can't cut off debate. And if we can't cut off debate, we're not going to be able to pass this bill. The American people, I believe, by an overwhelming majority, despite what the media moguls, again, with their phony polls, would have you believe, the American public is dead set against amnesty for any illegals in this country and what they have cost America, not only monetarily, but also in terms of human lives. So get on the wire, get on the phones, and get busy on this hate crimes bill. Get out and do it, starting tomorrow. Don't waste any time.